Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." We have this morning the opportunity to hear from not four, but five students who are involved in mission trips. Angelica Mazzarini's name was not is not on your program, but she'll be sharing as well. And the first one, I believe, is Nella Matthews. Please welcome her.
Good morning, you guys. How are y'all doing today? Okay, I just want to let you know, our trip to Mexico costs $825. $825. And I want to let you know some of the things I've got from it. First of all, I got a lovely heat rash on my hands. We painted a school there, and the paint we used was horrible paint to get off your hands. So we used paint thinner, which on a side note, I wouldn't recommend. It burns off your skin. It does not get off the paint. Also, while we were there, we had to wake up early every morning. So on spring break, when I could have been sleeping in, I had to wake up early. And thanks to this lovely snowstorm that we had in Cleveland, we spent 48 hours of absolute craziness just trying to make it back home. And you know what? Even with all these negative things that happened, I'd spend $825 to be there right now. We stayed at this Bethel Orphanage, which is home to about 30 orphanages. And for $825, I knew when I woke up in that morning, I'd walk out the door, down the steps, and there'd be at least one, if not more, little, adorable, smiling kid just waiting there to play with me, to for me to chase around and give papuchis, which is piggyback rides. They absolutely love that. So if you go to Mexico, prepare to give papuchis. Also, while we were there, we got to, as a group, go to different ministries. They varied from prisons. Drug rehabs, Indian village, and the one I got to go was a dump. And here at this dump, I got to see people who spent their days just digging through trash, and two of them accepted Christ. It was actually just amazing to see that. And also while I was there, I got to see God. Not the God that we just worship on Sundays, but the God that is there in our personal life every single day, that is living our life alongside of us. It's probably been since the beginning of this year that I've really struggled to see this God. You know, I went to church, I went through the motions, I was like, okay, you know, I'm a Christian, go to thing. But it seriously felt like my everyday life, like I was missing something. I was missing that personal God. And this was really frustrating for me because I know that the God I know and the God I love is not this type of God. He's the kind of God that wants to be right there alongside of you. And so that's why Mexico was such a blessing and such a reassurance, because I got to see that God. And not through like the whole through the church and stuff like that, which I did get to see God, but I got to see God through a little four-year-old boy. I got a little story to tell you guys. I like to tell you guys about Alberto. And okay, I know it's probably bad to pick favorites, but he was definitely one of them. Okay, and this is the first night, and we had only gotten to play with the kids for about an hour before we had to go out to dinner. And so when we came back, we started playing with the kids, and probably within 5 minutes of playing with his kids, little Alberto comes up, grabs a handful of sand, throws it in my face, and then just starts laughing at me. And then, to make things even worse, he walks back up, grabs another handful of sand, throws it right back in my face, and starts laughing. Of course, I try to be like the mature adult and be like, no, 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 Alberto, you know, that's bad. But inside, I couldn't help but just smile, like to see this joy that this kid had. And I just really got to thinking about it. In his 4 years of life, this kid has been through so much more than I have in my 20 years. I mean, he's been separated family, living in an orphanage. Like, I can't even fathom some of the stuff he's been through. And to see God alongside of him, just giving him the strength to make through that day and giving him that joy was just remarkable to see. Also, I was there, I got to see God on our ministry to the dump. Pretty much this dump is exactly kind of how the dump that was described last week in chapel, just miles and miles and miles of trash. And while I was there, me and a guy named Nate, who was from another team, walked out and was handing out water bottles. And while we were there, we ran into this family who was working. It was a mom, a dad, and a son, and we were handing out water bottles. And he realized that Nate knew Spanish, so they started talking. And I just kind of stand off to the side and was like, okay, you know, this is nice. But, like, he kind of translated certain parts of it. And at one point, he told me this man was a pastor. a pastor. That here is a man of God in this dump going through trash, and I just didn't know what to think. Like, this guy probably had to work out here in this trash just to make money because he didn't make enough money as a pastor. And to see this man, like, I mean, I had no idea what he was saying, but he was so content in his situation. He was so happy in his situation that you knew there was something greater. I know how easy it is for me to look at things, and when things aren't going good, to push God away and be like, you know what, God, like, you know, making me mad right now, kind of thing. And it's so easy. But to see this man and his family have such joy as they did this, it was just absolutely amazing. I mean, it's so easy for someone to look at this place and be like, where is God? Why isn't God here? But after meeting that man and his family, I knew that God was there. God was right there giving them the strength to make it through each day. And you know what, you guys? I could go on and on for hours. I'm getting the red flag right now because I have too much time. But I could tell you stories beyond stories. And I could you could see all these pictures. Well, they're not shown right now. But all these pictures of the trip. And just seriously, like, it's just amazing to see. But I can't share that same joy I felt when Alberto came up and gave me a hug. And I can't share that same pain that I felt leaving that dump, knowing that there was nothing else I could do for these people. Honestly, this is something you have to experience firsthand. So if God's placed it on your heart to attend a short-term mission trip, I strongly encourage you to do it. It's an amazing time. It'll change you. I know it changed me. Mexico changed me because that is where I got to see Jesus. Thank you for your time.
Hello. My name is Beth Riley, and over this spring break, I chose to go to Mendenhall, Mississippi. I was really excited, and I was really nervous, though, because I had never been down south, and I have never been on a mission trip before. My nerves did go away some on the way down because my group was awesome, but whenever we pulled into Mendenhall, I got really nervous again. The town was just really bad, and there's railroad tracks running down the middle of the town to separate the blacks and the whites. Whenever I first heard this, I was like, oh, wow, that's a pretty big deal. But whenever you actually go down and you see the segregation in the United States, it's just incredible. It's like we were in a different world. Along with the other volunteers that were with us, we were the only white people on the side of the tracks. Though as the week went on, my attitude changed towards these people and our differences. The actual week looked different for each person, though. Heading down, we didn't have any idea what we would be doing. In fact, we didn't know what we would be doing until that day. We worked with a ministry called Mendenhall Ministries, and they ran a school called Genesis One Christian School, where many of us would be working. Others worked in the office, others on the farm that the ministry owned, and some people cleaned out a house. On Friday, though, all of us went to Jackson, Mississippi for a field trip with some of the high schoolers. The first two evenings we were there, we just hung around the center and played games with the people that we lived with for the week. We had to stay inside mainly because of the tornado watch. On Wednesday evening, though, we got to attend the church's youth group, which was really fun. We got to socialize with the youth in the community. On Thursday and Friday evening, we got to play basketball with some of the boys who played for the school. And this might not sound too fun, but when you're playing with boys who are 6'8", the game becomes a lot more interesting. Some of these boys will continue to play at D1 schools after graduation, like Wake Forest, Florida State, and Georgia Tech. These troubled boys come all the way from California to New Jersey to Jamaica, so they can play basketball and finish their high school career, but to live in a healthy environment all the while. During my days of the week, I got to work in the school. I worked with the 3- and 4-year-olds on Monday, and then the rest of the week, I got the privilege to teach kindergarten class with Anna Chisholm. As an elementary education major, this was an amazing experience for me. We went through the normal school day with these girls, saying the pledge, singing, doing worksheets, going to recess, lunch, computers, and having them take naps. These were long days, but every second was amazing. It was a really small class because the school was so small, and there were only 6 girls in the class. Every single one of these girls were so precious, and we got really close to them. It was really hard to leave them. And sadly, about 2 weeks ago, we got news from Mendenhall that one of the girls, Kiwana, passed away over spring break. She had fallen off a swing over spring break. So this town that we were in, it's really small and very close, so this tragic accident affected everyone. And it's still really weird to think that we were with her only a little while ago. It really makes me stop and treasure what little time we do have on this earth. While we were there, we stayed with another group called Justice for All. They are from Iowa and Minnesota and have been coming down for as long as 28 years. We met one boy with them. His name was Luke, and he was 19 years old. He had a great impact on my life. The farm that the Mendenhall Ministry owns hasn't had a farm manager that lived on the farm for a while. Their last one was from Iowa. Luke saw this need, and he felt called by God to stay in Mississippi. He'll stay down there as an intern by himself until November. On the last night we were there, we were talking to Luke, and he said something that I won't ever forget. He said, "I am more afraid of not doing what God wants than to stay down here by myself." Seeing this devotion to God from this 19-year-old boy was amazing. This whole trip really opened my eyes up to a lot. I always knew about the hurt in this world, but now I can honestly say that we do live in a hurting world that needs to rely on the love of God. We need to treasure what we have, whether it is having a house, food on our table every night, a stable environment, being around loved ones, or life itself. We need to treasure what God has provided for us, but we need to realize that we need to go out and help those who aren't as fortunate. I have to say that the best part of this whole trip was seeing these little girls interact with each other, seeing them care for each other, and seeing them love each other. They were all sisters with one another, and this is where I saw Jesus. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Justin Rohrbaugh, and I attended the Aliquippa missions trip over spring break. And I'd like to describe Aliquippa to you, just to give you some context. Before 1985, Aliquippa was a booming town. Like, you'd walk down the main street of this place, and there would be people shoulder to shoulder just going to shops and doing all this stuff. There was, like, a buzz. It was excitement. There was riches that just flowed through this town. And this town was based on the steel mill that was just down the road that employed over two-thirds of the population. And this steel mill basically controlled the town. It set up different villages around the town, and they called them plans. And in each plan, they put a different race of people. And they did this to prevent strikes and unions amongst the mill. Well, in 1985, the mill shut down. And if you can imagine this, two-thirds of the population, that's 15,000 jobs that were lost in this community. And the community just plummeted. And it leads us to the state where it is today. Currently today, there's drug deals that go on all over the place. Recently, not too long ago, there was a shooting on a playground where a toddler had gotten shot. There was a shooting in front of the police station. I mean, the place is just falling apart. And there's a lot of different racial issues in the community. A lot of the whites blame the black people for the shutting down of the mill. I mean, there's just a lot of tension amongst this community. And so a lot of what we did, we went to this place called the Uncommon Grounds Cafe. Now, the Uncommon Grounds Cafe was started by a man named John Stanley. This man, it's kind of funny, he's an Australian missionary. And so he has that Australian accent, and it's really cool. I actually started picking it up a little bit while I was there. It was kind of neat. And so what this guy did is he came in and worked with it's an organization called the Community for Celebration. It's an evangelical organization that has been there since before 1985. kind of trying to restore the community. And so he came in conjunction with this community and started out in a church. They gave him a church. And he's trying to start up this ministry, and he realized that he couldn't make this ministry work within the church. People would not come to the church. And so he bought a little a property on the main street of Aliquippa and opened a cafe called the Uncommon Grounds Cafe. And you might see, oh yeah, there's pictures up there. And so this is where we worked. And what he does is he creates a place of hope for the people. The people come in and he talks to them. And it's just a really cool thing. He makes them feel appreciated. He incorporates them in the activities of his building and building a park next door. And so some of the things that we did for him, two of the nights we served a dinner for the community. We painted the upstairs floor, and there's a lot of paint fumes. Might have gotten a little high on the paint fumes. But so we painted the upstairs floor, and one of my favorite things that we did was he had bought a shop just down the road, and we had to break into this building because he wanted to redo the locks, and we couldn't get through the doors. And so we're climbing in through the wall, and we get in there, and the place is falling apart. I mean, you walk in, and there's this chilled air. I mean, it gives you the creeps. And there's like a mold and mildew on the wall, and it's falling apart. And he wants to turn this into an ice cream shop. And as soon as I got into that place, I realized what the Uncommon Grounds Cafe was prior to him coming in. The Uncommon Grounds Cafe was originally a strip bar prior to him coming in, and it closed down in 1993. He came in, and the place was disgusting. Like, there were broken bottles in the basement. There was sludge in the basement. There was bottles of tequila on the bar. I mean, the place was falling apart. And he came in, and instead of tearing it down, which probably would have been easier and cheaper, he realized the characteristics of that building and renewed it and restored it and brought it back to life and made it a place of hope in that community. And so as I'm in this ice cream shop, I'm thinking, you know, that's kind of what God does to us. He comes into our lives and he's like, this is my child. This person has hope. This person has character. This person has potential. And he restores us. And that when that struck me, it's one of those moments where you just sit back and you're like, wow, God, what are you doing? Like, it's just so cool. And so that's something that I learned over that spring break. And one other thing that I wanted to point out is I kind of think of Ecclesiastes when I think of this whole situation. Because, you know, it says in there, everything is meaningless, just a chasing after the wind. And I kind of equate that with the amount of stuff that was going on in Aliquippa prior to 1985. You know, there was all these people there, there's all this money flying around and all this stuff, and then it disappears. It disappears, and the only source of hope in that community was that community for celebration. You know, everything else can disappear, but God is going to stick with you. God is going to stick with you, and that's what happened in this community. And so when asked, where did I see Christ? I saw Christ at the heart of everything that's going on in that cafe. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Angelica Mazzarini, and I was part of the group that was called to go to Costa Rica. I want to start off with Hebrews 13:3. Remember those who are in prison as though in prison with them. This verse speaks on one of the most beautiful aspects of our Savior, his humbleness to bear our burdens as we struggle in life. We have all heard this before, but what does it look like today? Well, I was blessed to have seen it in a small church in Arcata, Costa Rica. I began the first seat in our group, which consisted of 10 wonderful girls and our leader, Mrs. Scheidenmantel. Our main work project was to dig 3-foot ditches for a new church building that would be 42 by 81 feet. Before this could happen, we had to clear the tropical brush from the land and remove the barbed wire that surrounded part of the property. And just in case you were wondering, our only tools were 6 shovels, 2 wheelbarrows, 2 machetes, and a spud bar. Yeah. It was hard work, but our group did a great job looking out for one another. The girls were always willing to take the place of someone who had been shoveling for a long time, and were even happy to work a little extra if one of us was not feeling well. Mrs. Scheidemann was constantly aware of our possibility of getting sunburnt and planned breaks to rehydrate and reapply. And of course, we encouraged each other by giving nicknames such as the human machete. So it was a lot of fun. But during the evenings, we had home-cooked meals at Pastor Rodrigo's house. But in Costa Rican culture, the host did not sit with the guests while they ate. See, we had all hoped that during dinner, we could get to know more about Pastor Rodrigo and his family. Well, one night, Pastor Rodrigo came to sit with us during dessert. That night, he shared with us that, as a boy, his father was absent, and to support his family, his mother worked long days. So he left home at an early age and became addicted to drugs. In the prime of his life, he lay in a hospital bed with 3 gunshot wounds to the back. In the silence, as the perpetually distracting clamor of the world was forced to be silent, he realized what a fleeting memory the world was. All it had added to him was 3 pieces of metal in his broken body. Lying deeper and even more painful was everything the world had taken, his broken spirit. But in the silence, Jesus was there, and he knelt quietly to pick up the sheep that had been lost. In the following years, God restored Pastor Rodrigo and eventually called him to be the shepherd of the broken for his kingdom. Pastor Rodrigo did not take this call lightly because he knew he was being called to be accountable for the prisoners of the world like he himself was a prisoner. You see, alcohol, adultery, addiction, and abuse are prevalent in the culture of Costa Rica. Yet Pastor Rodrigo and his wife, Aide, invited this culture into their home by starting a small church. As hurting people began to show up at their door, they cherished and they counseled them with the word. He and his wife shared with us testimonies of congregants and prisoners who had turned away from their years of sin to become new in the Lord. Their faces glowed in delight when they spoke of someone who had accepted Christ. Pastor Rodrigo's passion for the people was cemented in John 8:32. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And when the Bible verses flowed out of his speech, it was as if the overflowing of love in his heart could not keep it in. In a culture dominated by men as abusive leaders, he was humble and gentle to his wife and child. He made it a point to let us know that he rested in the power of prayer because, after all, prayer had brought us there. I saw Jesus because Pastor Rodrigo was transparent to him. It even showed in the little things he did during the day. It was evident in the way he brought us frozen juice after a day of playing in the heat with all the children from VBS, in the way he served and cleaned up dinner every night, in the way he poured our drinks, in the way he picked up people on the street and went out of his way to drop them off at home, in the way he brought meals and prayed over the sick, in the way that he stopped the church service to say, "Everybody, will you please sit with your family?" In the way he celebrated Kelsey's birthday. In all of these things, he and his family served. And after this night, I began to see in Pastor Rodrigo's heartfelt expression of God's work in his life, I began to see the eternal church, the church without walls. In every action, Pastor Rodrigo was building the church, a church dedicated to the restoration of God's people. By the end of the trip, I realized that we were not building the foundation of this church because it had already been built. It had been built by the word of God, transforming the hearts of the broken. And that is how I saw Jesus.
Hi, I'm Matt Hillier, and I went to New Orleans over spring break. And the very first question I received when I told my parents that I was going to New Orleans was, why? Why can't you go someplace else? Why can't you just go someplace safer, someplace nicer? And as you all know, New Orleans was hit with Hurricane Katrina in 2005, and it flooded 80% of the city. And this was the 5th deadliest and most costly natural disaster to hit New Orleans. And first of all, I'm going to share some common misconceptions that people have about New Orleans. I was asked, why are you going to New Orleans? That disaster happened years ago. Isn't everything getting back to normal? And the answer to that is definitely not. I was talking with Mr. Kevin, the leader of where we stayed, and he told me that he expects another 8 to 12 years easy before New Orleans can return to where it was pre-Katrina. Another misconception I heard was that people aren't grateful for their work. And I can tell you that that is most definitely false. We worked for Miss Susie the majority of the week, and she was probably one of the sweetest ladies that I met in my life. And she was a widowed grandmother who took her grandkids to school every morning and came back and did work. And she was out there talking with us every day, bringing us Pepsis. And she was definitely so grateful that we were there. We left Geneva Saturday morning, traveled all day, and had a very interesting van ride down. We were driving with the Mississippi and Alabama trips. We had some fun with that. We spent the night at Covenant College in Georgia and left early the next day and traveled for the majority of the day. We entered New Orleans Sunday before dark, and immediately the destruction was evident. As we were driving through on the freeway looking down at the neighborhoods, there were just destroyed houses everywhere, some being rebuilt, some not even touched, but there were just the empty lots is what really struck me, that there's just nothing there anymore. We got to TCC, Trinity Christian Community, where we were spending the week at and working with the AmeriCorps workers there. After we read the rules, Mr. Kevin, who runs the place, came up with one of the AmeriCorps workers, Lisa DeWay, and had a moment of prayer. It turned out that Lisa had her car stolen from TCC earlier that day, and Mr. Kevin, I'll never forget the words he said. He said, maybe this week you guys will see a miracle, because God's at work down here. God's at work everywhere. All you have to do is trust in him. While we were down there, we did various kinds of work. Like I said, we worked at Miss Susie's house. We scraped and painted her entire house throughout the week. The other half of the group did drywall. They helped clean up TCC because we got hit with a storm when we were down there. And they actually cleaned a whole hillside, which was pretty hard work, so congrats to those guys. But on Tuesday, we were at Miss Susie's house all morning doing our work, and then we came back for lunch. And while we were at lunch, Lisa got a call that they had found her car. One of her friends was following it down the street in Holly Grove, which was the area we were staying. So she jumped in the van with a couple other AmeriCorps workers and took off. And that left five guys sitting in a school van. So we decided that we would be heroes and try and cut off the car. Yeah, not the best idea, but so we safely drove out of TCC and went to whatever, Olive Street, I believe, was the street that the car was on. And we drove all the way down that, and we couldn't find it. And we went to the main street and drove back and forth a couple times, probably killed about an hour of time. And after that, we gave up, and we went back to the house, and we realized that we didn't really have any work to do, because Lisa was our leader. She was the one with the keys to the house where all our tools were. So we were sitting there doing absolutely nothing. And I'm standing on the sidewalk, and a white car drives by. We were looking for a white car with Iowa license plates, because that's where Lisa was from. A white car drives by, and I make the joke, yeah, I'm just going to sit here all day and watch the license plates, not do any work, you guys have fun. And the very next car that drove by was a white car with Iowa license plates. So we jumped in the van, once again, safely pulled out, drove down the street, and they took a right a couple blocks ahead, and they ditched the car. We quickly turned the van around and parked behind a warehouse. We were kind of watching it. We could see the car, but our big school van's not very subtle. We called the cops, and the cops ended up coming. They blocked off the whole block. There were two K-9 units, several undercovers, and we sat there and watched them clear all the buildings, like all the abandoned houses, one by one, which probably wasn't a good idea either in case the bad guys were sitting in there. But it ended up, we went back to TCC and didn't really do anything for the rest of the day because we were kind of fired up because we found the car. So that was the eventful thing that happened Tuesday during the day. Something not so good, Tuesday night we went to Bourbon Street just to experience the culture. And on the way there, when we stopped at dinner, Matt Barony, one of the guys on our trip, had his wallet stolen. And that just illustrates, like, the community down there. We were in a very bad neighborhood. We were actually working a block away from the street where most of the murders are committed in New Orleans. So that was just intense. On Wednesday night, we went to the Lower Ninth Ward, and this was very emotionally devastating. This is where the levee actually broke, and everything there is overgrown. There are no houses. There's just nothing left. And it was very depressing, and it was very hard on all of us. Friday was our last day there to work, and because our group was split in half, and because of the whole car chase thing, we didn't exactly finish painting Miss Susie's house. So we decided to stay over and finish it to work into the night. So big props to the guys who stayed over and finished that. We're working hard. And Friday was our last day of work. We ended up coming back Saturday and drove through the night, hit that crazy snowstorm in Ohio. We got back a few days later. We got a Facebook message from Lisa, whose car was stolen, and apparently the kids came back and tried to steal it again, but she had a club on it, so they didn't get very far. The neighbor actually yelled at them and they ran away. And then Friday, I got a call. I was sitting in Bible class, and Thursday night, the kids came back again, and they sawed through the club, but she had taken the fuse out of her ignition so the car wouldn't start. So they ended up breaking into TCC and trying to get into a tool shed, and one of the AmeriCorps workers, Mark Smith, was coming back from working out, and he saw them and yelled at them, and they ran away. He chased them and ended up getting shot twice in the arm and the stomach. And this was pretty emotionally devastating for all of us because we had worked hand in hand with Mark all week. And this was someone who I respected greatly. He's given up a year to be down in New Orleans. And I just found this out today that with all the blood loss he had, he should be dead right now. But he's not. He was in critical condition. He got shot in the liver, and they're done performing surgeries right now. They had induced a coma. So the good news is he's awake, and he's responding to questions. He still has a feeding tube, so he's not talking. And I heard on the news yesterday that they're expecting him to walk soon. So that's good. I just want to thank everyone who was praying for him. The theme of today is, where did you see Jesus? I saw Jesus in the 9 other volunteers who gave up a week to go down to New Orleans and work hard. And just, we were doing some pretty hard work, getting up at 7 o'clock every morning, and there was no complaining whatsoever. So I'm proud of those guys. I saw Jesus in the long-term volunteers who are giving up anywhere from 10 months to a whole lifetime of service to New Orleans. I saw Jesus in Matt Barony and Lisa DeWay, who had their wallet and their car stolen. Throughout that, with all the questions that came up and not knowing what's going to happen, they still put on a smile, and they were there giving it their best at work, and that was just an inspiration to me throughout the week. I saw Jesus in those who helped me personally. Like I said, New Orleans was pretty emotionally devastating. It raised a lot of questions in my life, and I just want to thank everyone who prayed for me, who sent me Bible verses, and who just talked and heard my story. I saw Jesus in everyone who stopped what they were doing and prayed for Mark, because that was, everyone I talked to instantly said, he's in my prayers, I'll start praying for him. People even stopped what they were doing right then, no matter what, and just, we prayed, and that was just amazing for me to see. I saw Jesus and all the people who came back from spring break with the stories and with the adventures that they had, just giving up a week of their time where they could have been sleeping in, but instead they chose to work. I saw Jesus because people were willing to make sacrifices, and God showed through those sacrifices. The two questions I'm going to leave you with are, where are you seeing Jesus in your life, and are you putting yourself in a position to see him?